This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Comp. Headlines editor was Nell Abram. Our Washington, D.C. correspondent, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Rose Katapchi and Janine Etter. Our theme music was composed and produced by Alan Weatherhead. We welcome your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. For more news stories, specials, and our documentaries, visit us online at fsrn.org and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fsrn. Thanks for listening in Los Angeles. I'm Dorian Marina.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio. Please stay tuned for Labor Radio coming up next, and after that at 6:30 is Prison Pipeline.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Oregon Council 75. Representing over 25,000 Oregon public and private sector employees, families, and communities. Protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members since 1942. More information at www.OregonAFSCME.com. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503 OPEU, whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Hello, thanks for tuning in to Labor Radio with your Second Monday hosts, Megan and Meredith. Tonight's program is about the new movement of fast food workers and the strike against poverty, the fight for a $15 minimum wage. But first, in local labor news, Precision Cast Parts workers lost this round in the struggle to unionize their workplaces by about 300 votes. Meanwhile, workers at our own KBOO Radio have voted to join CWA Local 7901. Congratulations, KBOO staff!
Coming this month in labor activism is the annual VOS Benefit Dinner on Wednesday, June 12th at 6 p.m. at the Ascension Catholic Church at 7507 Southeast Yamhill Street. This year's theme is Building Our Future, Working Together. They will have a night of live entertainment, silent auction, dinner, and dancing. You can help keep the Postal Service public at the rally, protest, and sit-in on Saturday, June 15th at the airport. Postal truckers, mail handlers, and clerks are losing their jobs as work is being subcontracted to non-union companies in Salem. From 10 to 11:30 a.m., postal protectors will gather at the Portland Air Cargo Center.
The next big Portland Rising action will be Saturday, June 29th from 10:30 to 12:30 at Holiday Park. There will be music, food, teach-ins, and good weather at this gathering to promote healthy cities and fight against austerity. Find more details at jwjpdx.org. Tonight in part one of our two-part series, we'll talk to workers involved in the Seattle fast food worker strike, the first of its kind on the West Coast to demand the $15 minimum wage. In tonight's segment, we focus on the experience of two Seattle workers and two local Portland supporters during the strike itself. And next month on Second Monday Labor Radio, we'll hear from these workers on how these actions fit into the labor movement as a whole.
I'm in the studio today with Emmett Nolan and Dennis Gravy, two members of the Industrial Workers of the World, also known as the Wobblies, who were up in Seattle recently for the fast food worker strike. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for being here. And what can you tell us about what happened last week in Seattle?
Dennis and I were part of a small group of organizers that went up to Seattle. We were coming from the IWW, and there were three organizers from We Are Oregon that went to assist with the day of and the day after. This was the most recent fast food strike in Seattle, picking up where other cities have done so as well. And it was extremely inspiring to see what the numbers were. I think were approximately about 100 workers from 30 different workplaces all went on strike. Some of them had density enough to actually shut down their restaurants for a matter of hours or days for the day. And which was extremely inspiring. The whole day escalated to the point that led to a rally in the afternoon that led into a march where a couple hundred people rallied outside of three locations, encouraging and supporting workers to walk out for this demand of $15 an hour and the right to organize. And it all culminated into a takeover of a McDonald's where probably about 200 folks squeezed inside of a McDonald's, chanting and demonstrating their right to organize and their right to have $15 an hour to live on. My role was simply to support the strike. So what I experienced was waking up really early, going to different workplaces, and talking to as many passerbyers as possible to inform them about what was going on. Right. What we participated in were strike lines. Each workplace where there was a strike, there was a line of about, I would say in the beginning, about 30-some people. And then as the movement converged in different parts of the city, it grew to a couple hundred. And on those lines, there was folks chanting for change. There were folks holding up signs. There were folks giving testimonials, folks doing interviews with the press. And what I participated in was outreaching to the passerbyers to encourage their participation and to inform them about what was happening in their city.
The last thing that we participated in was helping workers go back to work the next day, walk them back as community, as solidarity from the community, saying that the employers were not going to retaliate because we were watching and that anything that they tried to pull was going to be returned. So,
Dennis, so this is coming off of multiple strikes across the country, one-day strikes. New York, Detroit, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Chicago. What's going on that's motivating low-wage fast food workers to take this kind of action?
So all of these are across the country, starting with New York in November, have been collaborations between labor groups and community groups, largely SEIU affiliates and former ACORN chapters. And our understanding of this was kicked off in New York through New York Communities for Change, and which is formerly ACORN and SEIU locals out there. And they were surveying, New York Communities for Change was surveying people about housing and discovered that the real issue was wages. And then they had previous relationships with SEIU folks and developed this idea to actually start organizing the lowest wage workers, the fast food workers. You know, the minimum wage in New York is $7.25, and New York City is one of the most expensive places to live in the country. So this is really a pervasive issue, right? This disparity of wages and the cost of living increasing and wages not increasing, and so these groups have galvanized some energy in low wage workers to actually start mobilizing and talking about that and trying to see if there's a way to change that.
And Dennis, can you tell folks where they could go to find out more information about this wave of fast food strikes?
Yeah, if you want to know more about each individual strike, there's been a lot of great articles at Salon.com and The Nation. The Seattle strike was organized by the groups Washington Community Action Network and Washington When Working Washington, both of whom have great information on their websites. And I'm sure that any contact with them would be give helpful advice and interesting thoughts.
That was Megan speaking to two local restaurant workers who made the trip to Seattle 2 weeks ago for the fast food worker strike, the Strike on Poverty. This is Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. Up next are interviews with two Seattle participants in the strike and walkouts on May 30th.
So I am speaking with Phil Neal, who was another fast food worker at Chipotle, who participated in the recent walkout in Seattle. Phil, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
So what was it like at Chipotle, and what did you see and witness on that day?
I think generally it was just kind of, you know, it was intense. That's a lot of us who had been up pretty early prepping for the walkout, and then we kind of went right into it with building up presence on Capitol Hill in Seattle and hitting places as they opened to pull workers. And kind of the first place we went to that morning was a Subway, which was shut down immediately after sending in a few other Subway workers to talk to the one worker who had come in. And then we went, you know, down to the Chipotle that I work at. And at the time, I was the only one who had already known about and, you know, agreed to the strike, but I was able to pull three other workers who were coming in out of five total non-manager workers. And the only ones left in the store then were the ones who were already in when we got there.
What did it look like when you would arrive at a store?
Basically, we had crowds of varying size. That was really early, so they were smaller, but still at least like 10, 15 people would get around kind of the entrances of the store, on the sidewalks and that sort of thing, do chanting and then let the usually people who worked at that store or like for the same corporation go in and talk to the other workers or talk to them out on the sidewalk when they were coming in, trying to convince to join the strike. And whenever anybody did decide to join, there was a lot of cheering. We had new places shutting down, basically like Subways, especially where we didn't have any workers from these Subways, and we would just have Subway workers from other Subways go in and talk to workers, and then it would be, you know, shut down. After that talk, they would get the one or two workers in there to walk out. So we actually increased the total number of stores participating. As far as actual stores shut down, those stores shut down for at least a portion of the day, usually would later like call in regional managers or something to come try to open them.
Can you tell us, Phil, a little bit about this conversation that folks might have been having, for instance, with the Subway workers? What did it look like? What were people talking about?
So, like, kind of organizing on the day of, especially with workers who hadn't heard of it before, it was one of those moments where you have to kind of compress a lot of information into very little time. But it really helps to have that crew of people there with you.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of different approaches. Like, at my store, that one of the people who walked out had just been hired. And so that was a very different approach than talking to people who had been there for a while. So people who had been there for a while, we all kind of shared the same problems that they had. There were things that you could talk just directly to, of like, here's this issue in the workplace, and I know that you've experienced this too, et cetera, et cetera.
And what kinds of issues are folks dealing with, Phil?
I think the big general one is just poverty-level wages, period. The other big thing at places like Chipotle, Qdoba, a lot of the stores that kind of present themselves as social corporations and try to say that they're different than regular fast food, those places there's also kind of a big cognitive dissonant, a psychological aspect where you're told, oh, it's a different culture, but you're still being paid bottom tier wages. Even people who have been given promotions are not able to raise families or have afford apartments that can give rooms for their kids. Traditional picture of the food worker as like a teenager who's, you know, still kind of subsidized by their parents, et cetera, et cetera. Like, some of those people do work in the food service industry, but are definitely the minority within it. And the bigger groups that compose food work and low-wage, like, food service in Seattle, I would say kind of come from two or three backgrounds. And the first of those is, like you said, like recent immigrant population from all over. The other big groups that you see now are people who have some college education, but that other big chunk is coming from people who are like downwardly mobile. So people whose parents maybe were middle class and are no longer middle class, who don't necessarily have like the parental like subsidy, but who are also have some higher level of education but can't do anything with that for whatever reason. And so you see a huge increase in these kind of low-wage jobs and service sector jobs, and they're being filled also by people who maybe formerly would have been put into like the so-called middle class, but that no longer exists.
And really, what are the jobs that are emerging right now for folks?
Well, the thing in Seattle is Seattle still has kind of that bulge of like creative class jobs, where you have like a, you know, a tech industry and that sort of thing. But that's a minority of the population. It's kind of a wealthier upper minority. On the national level, it composes maybe like 33% of the population, and the other two-thirds are in these low-income service sector or menial transport labor. In Seattle, it's also something which gets a little skewed because a lot of these food service positions are in, like, downtown. They'll be near the tech hubs. They're in Capitol Hill. But many of us who work there can't afford to live in those areas, and many actually have to live outside the city limits of Seattle. So many of my coworkers, for instance, live in, like, the South Seattle suburbs, like Tukwila, Federal Way, all the way down to, like, Maple Valley, incredibly long commutes, and then you don't have any political representation or anything like that within the city. The entire city has itself been priced out, but at the same time, we still provide that undergirding of labor for the creative class or whatever who can still afford to live in the city. Or you can spend the entirety of your paycheck to live closer to work.
The issue of part-time work is really pervasive in food work, from what I've heard. It's difficult to get full-time hours. So you have a situation where people are working multiple jobs to complete their paychecks. Do you see that?
Oh, yeah. Many of the workers that I work with are doing multiple jobs in food service and in kind of low-end service work generally. The 40-hour work week is not the fact anymore. The 8-hour day and the 40-hour week are no longer standard. And they're not standard in two ways. First, because at a single job, you're getting less than those in both respects. You're usually working like 6-7-hour shifts. You're working for like 20 hours a week, maybe at most like 26 or something. And then in order to pair that to get something that's closer to living wage, people are getting second jobs where they're doing the same thing. So in one sense, you don't have 40 hours or eight hours a day at one job. And then in the other sense, people are very often doing much more than that. So working more than 40 hours a week, people working like 12, even 16 hour days, just in order to have what would have formerly been kind of like a living wage at 40 hours a week with 8 hours a day.
What happened when the strike was over and the workers who had walked out and participated in the actions outside of the stores returned to work?
Basically, what's happened so far is, like, from the company side, kind of nothing. Like, there hasn't been much retaliation that I know of. I know that one worker at one store has gotten a write-up for, like, a no-call, no-show, and there's discussion right now about how best to deal with that. But there's been no other form of retaliation that I know of. At my workplace, there's no retaliation, and we were told that there wouldn't be any. At other workplaces, I've heard that it's the same. One of the big things that I've heard from, like, most workplaces is that, like, managers, you know, who are also in a really bad position, even if they're in a marginally better position, you know, they're supportive. Like, largely, the managers are supportive. Workers have been coming up. Workers who did not participate have been coming up to those who did participate and saying, like, you know, that was really cool. What, like, tell me more about what this thing is. So it's had a kind of a general, like, magnetizing effect where it's drawn a lot of workplaces around, like, not just the issues, but also the idea of, like, workers having this power and action. And I think seeing no retaliation from the companies is also going to hopefully embolden other workers to say, yeah, I can stand up to this, and I won't necessarily lose my only source of income, and we could potentially make it better.
Well, I could talk to you forever, but thanks for being a part of Labor Radio.
Yeah.
Take care.
Bye.
This is KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, and you're listening to Labor Radio. I am speaking with Cody Cadden of the North City Burger King in Seattle, who was one of the fast food workers who walked out in the recent fast food workers' strike on poverty in Seattle. Cody, thanks for being on the show.
Hi.
So tell us a little bit about what it was like to walk out and your and other fast food workers' reasons for participating in this action.
We are working basically with poverty wages, and it's one thing to just to say that and to, you know, rally for more money, but it's another thing to actually be in the position of having bills to pay, having mouths to feed, and not really being able to make ends meet, and being restricted with the amount of hours we work just so we don't get paid benefits and things like that. So now we have to spend what little money we have on, like, government health insurance and other things like that just to take away from the little money we have just to try to make ends meet.
Just to survive.
And it was really neat, though, to see how many people got involved. Like, that felt really cool. To see all of our regular customers and other workers, like, stand for our cause and stand with us.
How many folks walked out? Did you shut it down? How'd it work?
Yeah, we got there about 6:30 in the morning, and although the workers didn't shut anything down, of course, but we had enough people walk out of our restaurant that the management did decide to close our restaurant down for a few hours because they were not able to do it, not able to run the restaurant without us. We had about 10 people walk out, and so that's about a third of our workforce there.
Wow. And how...
Yeah, so that was pretty cool.
How long had you guys been planning for that, or was it sort of spontaneous? How did that work?
A little bit of both. It had been going on for about a month. Just people all over Seattle, you know, have been... you know, suffering for a long time, and we've been kind of, you know, keeping an eye on what's going on across the rest of the country, and we just felt like it was time, and so we, you know, kind of band together, and all sorts of different people, all sorts of walks of life, all across the greater Seattle area.
Obviously, this is just a first step in a longer struggle. What would you say to other workers in that position who may be afraid to kind of take a step like you and your coworkers were able to do?
Well, it is very nerve-wracking just because, you know, like I said, we are in a bad position and we're not making much money. So what would be worse than that? Well, not making any money, getting fired. And so I get why that would be scary, but we just need to remind the corporations that, you know, we do make a commitment to them every day, and we work really hard to put food on our tables as well as food on our employers' tables. And just want to remind them that we are the, I don't want to use this as a negative term, but we are the grunt workers. We are the ones breaking our backs and, you know, to stay proud and to stay strong. And it's not bad to work a fast food restaurant, but just to stick by your guns when they're not treating you right, when they're taking your hours, your overtime hours, and pushing them over into the next week so you don't get paid for them, where you, you know, not allowed to get benefits. Like, we just need to stand up for our rights.
Or else nothing's going to change.
That's right.
So you said you're in a band?
Yeah, a couple different bands.
What kind of music?
I'm in a jazz band, a reggae band, a funk band, couple different, yeah.
Hey,
I play trombone.
If there's any song that would be appropriate for the show, and you don't mind me putting it on the air, I will.
Sweet.
Stay
good.
In touch.
I'm glad I could be of some help.
And this is Cody's band, Ironwood, with an original tune called Politician.
You're trying to do the wrong with me. That's just your messed up philosophy. Please, politician, no more lies. Now who do you think that we despise? Politician, you got someone to clean your kitchen. Politician, politician, when will you learn? When will you listen? Politician, politician, don't keep us down in your social prison. Social prison. Politician, politician, you pay someone to clean your kitchen. Politician, politician, when will you learn? When will you listen? Politician, politician, you got someone.
Thanks to Cody, Phil, Emmett, and Dennis for sharing their experiences with us tonight. And thanks to our KBOO engineer, Danielle, for making this show possible. Now stay tuned for Prison Pipeline at 6:30.
All of this traces back to Magna Carta 800 years ago. Magna Carta had two components. One is the Charter of Liberties, the famous one, which I discussed, the foundation of Anglo-American law, and now being torn to shreds before our eyes. The other part is what was called the Charter of Forests. Now, that was dedicated to protection of the commons from the ravages of the power centers of the day.
That's Noam Chomsky, Magna Carta, Then and Now, on the next Alternative Radio. Tune into Alternative Radio this Tuesday at 9 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 Community Radio. We just got done listening to Labor Radio. This KBOO program had been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information at ubc156.org. So please stay tuned next for Prison Pipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO.